I feel extremely lucky
to be here
with all of you fighting for justice,
for equality,
for the right for us to equally exist in this country.
There were 329 uprisings, 157 cities within 4.5 years. And neither Martin nor Fannie had any control over that.
We might be headed to the promised land
of speaking the truth
and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
But their children were saved, and their children's children. Generations were saved
by one decision, one person. What my thought was, and this is a selfish thought, and I want to parse it from other thoughts that I had. I'm seeing the government work so hard in Afghanistan. I'm watching the news work so hard to cover Afghanistan. I'm seeing people across the country have an opinion about Afghanistan. And I'm thinking to myself selfishly, what if we could all unify all of that to focus on America?
Man, you really are selfish.
Right? Sorry about that. I've had other thoughts about humanitarian aid. And, you know, I think they should, anybody that wants to leave a country they're oppressed in should have the right to leave and come here. I'm fine with that. Let's lose our southern border. But can we focus on America? Because there's shit going on right now, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to touch base with you and ask you a couple questions, if it's okay, about just... I have a question. What's an issue that your kids are dealing with at a community level, at a neighborhood level? And then how do we address that within the community so that they don't have to deal with that and they can grow as people and become better than us?
That's a good one.
It is. And I didn't give you any foresight on that at all.
No. So I would say, like, in terms of what are some issues that my kids are having to deal with?
Well, you think, I can tell you, Jay, he believes that it's not only education, but who's doing the educating and what they're talking about.
I mean, my kids have definitely seen that too. Like, even in what they learn at school. Like, for example, my favorite example to go back to is my youngest. Their history book had this. It had this paragraph. When I say mm-hmm. this, I mean middle school paragraph about this relationship between settlers and a Native American community, and how when things weren't going quite the way that the settlers wanted it, they literally said soon there would be conflict. Like it was really hard for them to say, and then there was a genocide.
Interesting. So it's the words that they're using.
Oh, you know, and that's the thing is, like, you know, they're wanting to, like, make some of this buttery smooth, like it's going to be somewhat easier to swallow the fact that we killed God knows how many Native Americans, and then use words like soon there would be conflict. I'm sorry, what?
Right.
What?
Felt like a little more than conflict to the Indians at the time, you know?
Right. It's, you know, it's, I'm pretty sure that conflict is not the word that should be used, but what do I know? I would say that, you know, yes, the education part of it is definitely huge. Like, and the who's doing the teaching. I think right now, though, like, my kids are more worried about going back to school because they want to see their friends, and they miss their friends, and they miss that interpersonal interaction.
Right.
But at the same time, like, hospitals are fucking full here, dude. And that's a pressure that they don't want to have on them.
Okay.
You know, like,
Mississippi has 20,000 children quarantined and 600, as of a couple days ago, 600 cases of children having COVID. So it is an issue, right? So is school, it's more of an immediate thing, right? Mm-hmm. We can't even think long term until we get past this short term stuff.
Right. You know, and that's the thing is, like, this short term stuff like COVID has highlighted a bunch of other issues within the community.
Right.
Like, how do we, you know, like, how do we make sure that kids are able to have meals? Because a lot of kids have been relying on the school lunch program and, mm-hmm. you know, expanded breakfast programs to get two of their three a day, you know, yeah. And that's definitely been something that, you know, is, I would say, in terms of community, like, how do you provide that in the middle of a pandemic, you know?
Food insecurity. I love it.
Some school districts have been doing things like, you know, they're like, well, we can't keep our bus drivers employed if they aren't picking up kids. Okay, well, what if they're dropping off meals? And
right.
And some people were like, surprised Pikachu face, like, this is a thing you can do? Why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't it be something that you could do where you could, you know, have your kids, you know, have your buses run the same route and then have kids come pick up breakfast and lunch?
Right.
You know,
there was a system in Texas during COVID where teachers were going to students individually to their houses. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine just having a bus full of teachers going to the students might be interesting. You know what I mean? I like that.
You know, so being able to, you know, understanding what community outreach looks like, even yeah. in the middle of a pandemic is, I think, you know, that was something that some of, you know, that my kids were worried about with some of their friends was, you know, are they going to get the help that they need, whatever that help may look like.
Right.
And so, you know, unfortunately we find ourselves in the middle of trying to solve immediate needs without thinking about long-term needs. And I think long-term right. needs, you know, for example, this is one that's come up in the news, the school lunch program. You know, and how there's one school district in Wisconsin that has decided to roll back to the pre-pandemic lunch plan. But there's been reports that have come out that said that one of the school board members thought that if kids got school lunches, they could become spoiled. Like,
yeah,
what?
With the school lunches spoiled me. That government cheese made me the man I am today.
Hoo-wee. Yeah. I'm going to go with, I've like, even just for us, like when our kids were on the school lunch program, like those things are not exactly filling or, plentiful, or, I mean, in some mm-hmm. cases good.
That's my point. We're fighting for school lunches. We're not fighting for the quality of what we already have.
And so, like, yikes, like some of the stuff that I saw them handing out, I mean, like, I was getting pissed at my kid for getting double lunches because it was costing us money. But then when I saw what they were getting as a single lunch, I was like, oh, shit, what? Mm. Like, this is right. what a single looks like? No wonder you're getting double lunches.
Right. And welcome to the government's version of literally everything, including the future of Medicare for all. You're going to get a lousy portion of a generic drug while everybody else gets the latest version, you know, so.
And it was just absolutely wild to me. And so it's not like in the last 5 years, school lunch program has fundamentally changed and that, you know, these kids are like walking through like a high end sushi bar or anything like right. that. It's nothing like that. It's like, yeah. you know, it's grade D suitable for prisons and dormitories.
Right. I think it was Trey Crowder I saw discuss this, and he was saying the same thing. Like, I got a square piece of pizza, you know, it's not like I'm going to get spoiled.
And that's just even it is like the school lunch programs that we grew up on are even different than the school lunch programs that exist now, which is, you know, where people are sitting there thinking about, you know, they kind of went all out with our school lunch programs a little bit mm-hmm. more than they do now. And looking Agreed. At what they do, look at what they get now. It's like, yeah, no, this is not great. And on top of that, you know, as I've talked about with my kids here the last couple of days, it's like there's plenty of evidence out there that show that, you know, kids who have access to, you know, their meals, number one, they are usually more attentive in class and they do better in school. They have fewer behavioral issues.
Yeah.
Because, well, guess what? When you aren't fucking starving,
yep.
turns out the brain can do great things. And Agreed. As somebody who grew up in that, you know, can confirm. Mm. So in my mind, you know, one of the things that we've required that kids go to school, right? And yeah. to me, as part of that, you know, like in some states, like straight up, if your kids don't go to school, they will send cops to your house to make your kids either go to school, or they will like go through, I forget what the process is called, where essentially it's like a delinquency process for
like truancy.
Truancy, yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
Oh, cool. I finally got a word in to help you. Yep. It's just what I'm saying is between homeschooling and charter schools and public school, which is
there's interesting.
A variety of options, you
which
know
is interesting. Like, which is interesting because it, you know, as long as you enroll your kid in some type of school, like truancy doesn't apply. But if your kid is a public school kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you literally can be forced to send your kid to school. Like, and that's right. one of the things that I'm concerned about, at least right now, is that, you know, if my kids didn't want to go to school because, you know, there's a fucking pandemic raging and there's no hospital beds and they don't want to have that level of fear put on their lives, that right. somebody could literally show up and be like, hey, your kid's got to show up for class. And I'm like, in the middle of a pandemic, fuck you.
Right. The fact that your children have to have more common sense than our public officials is weird to me.
Well, and so, but to go back to the whole school lunch thing, it's like, I'm of the mindset of if you're going to require kids be in attendance at classes, then it is incumbent upon you to make sure that they are going to be able to focus and do their schoolwork. And that includes providing breakfast and lunch.
That's period, just end of a story. Fact. If there's a kid trying to get a lunch, just give it to him.
Right.
I never had to pay for a lunch at my school. It was built in, I guess, because we just walked through the line and got the average lunch. Burrito one day, pizza the next day, fish sticks the next day. It was crap, but it was there consistently and I didn't have to pay or beg or ask for it.
And that's just it is that I fully believe that, you know, students that are going to be in school need to make sure that they're at least getting their meals. And depending on the school districts, you know, at least in here in Washington, they'd actually send food home on the weekends. Yeah. And in some cases, if I remember correctly, like if there were leftovers, they would box them up and send them home with some of the kids for dinner.
That's perfect.
You know, so number one, you're reducing food waste. Number two, you know, making sure kids have something to eat.
Right.
Like, you know, and it was weird because like at one point in time, like, you know, when I had first moved up, you know, we got asked if we wanted to get like the weekend meals sent to us. And we were we didn't realize it was like, no, we don't need that. We've got that covered. So make sure that gets to somebody who does need it.
Oh, I like that. That's the other thing. People have to be less selfish, you know, just grabbing at whatever they can, like it's a food line, you know?
You know, and so... And especially like, you know, especially like right now where most likely a lot of our food supply chains are going to be completely fucked because of international trade wars and this, that, and the other.
Right.
You know, great. If China doesn't want to import our apples, I can think of a school lunch program that would love to have fresh apples for their students or for their breakfasts.
What are we going to do with all the chicken feet though?
Well, you know.
China is the main importer of all of our chicken feet. Nobody ever thinks about the amount of chicken feet that our pets are going to have to eat because China isn't taking them anymore.
I mean, I'm sure Billy Bones wouldn't mind, but Billy Bones will literally eat anything.
Right.
So,
anything.
Yeah, she'll eat.
And then there's the other problem. We're offering children food, but at what point do restrictions come into play? Like special needs, the celiac, these people that can't have too much sugar. I mean, we can't give our kids too much sugar, but we can't give them not enough sugar. We have to give them something. We have to have a balance. What the hell? Is that something we address at our PTA meetings?
Well, I mean, like anything else, you know, when it comes to, you know, there's only so much that a person can reasonably expect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Schools are not gluten, you know, entirely gluten-free environments. That's just the reality.
Okay.
Unfortunately, like that's something that, you know, what does equity look like in addressing that? That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you bring in sealed things that are, you know, have definitely been processed in gluten-free environments? I think that's absolutely something that's...
If you can, yeah.
Well, I don't even think it's an if you can. I think that it's, you know, you can do it. The question is, you know, what does that look like in terms of readily available? What does that look like in terms of school district to school district being willing
exactly.
to do it? Willingness, I think, is more of the issue. And bottom line, again, I'm going to go back to if you're going to require kids to be in school, then you need to have meals available to them, period. It doesn't matter if they're gluten-free, if they have nut allergies, melon allergies. I don't give a shit. It's like what it kosher. Means is kosher, halal. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like you need to have food readily available for growing minds to be able to do the things that you're requiring of them, period. End of
story. For sure. I think school by school, community by community has to depend less on the federal basic standard and meet the needs of the kids in the school. And if you need a little more budget for that, it should be there. You know, if you have to budget in special foods, then that's what you have to do in your community. I don't think the federal government should be, I don't think we should be dependent on a government standard for the basic, because I just don't think every community, we talk about that with everything. A federal policy shouldn't address each community. It can't possibly. It's a generic average. And I think I want to be community-wise. Community-wise, I want to address that in our communities instead of looking to big daddy government to solve all of these problems. Mm-hmm. Maybe the federal government would have handled COVID and Afghanistan better if we were helping ourselves a little more in our communities, in our neighborhoods, on our blocks, with our neighbors.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Because, you know,
I love how neutral you are. You will not bash the government when I give you a straight chance.
I'm going to bash them. I just don't necessarily think that it's quite the way that you look. I mean, let's be realistic. This is president number four that's dealing with Afghanistan, And the fact of the matter was that, you know, the quote unquote objective before was to kill bin Laden and you know, cut off, you know, Al-Qaeda's head. And then for the next 10 years, we were kind of like playing kick the can in Afghanistan.
Right.
Nation and it's like, building. What the that was never part of the objective. So
fighting for equality in Afghanistan, but, you know, calling Black Lives protesters assholes for protesting.
Yeah, and so what it boiled down to was that it became a great way for the government to pay a bunch of contractors to make new defense weapons for us, so that way we could have a fucking sloppy exit.
Right. It was 20 years of Halliburton getting money to feed our troops.
Yeah, it's a fucking disaster is what it is. And
yeah.
It just is. It's absolutely fucking insane. You know, the idea that the federal government was going to do this any better is just laughable, because you know, I was talking about this with another friend. When you look at what does war look like, when you think about what our quote unquote most successful wars have been versus what our least successful wars have been, you know, a couple of the best examples, like number one, when you look at World War II, it was very much deal with, you know, a Japanese empire that was a threat, and deal with a Nazi empire that was a threat.
Yep.
It had very clear goals: capitulation, period, end of story. And those two empires capitulated. And after that, you know, yes, we had a presence in there, but we also invested really heavily in their economies for them to be able to, you know, rebuild themselves. But, you know, in those regards, though, when you think about it, our investment in those economies weren't because we needed a stable Germany in order to, you know, make sure that we didn't see the rise of national socialism again. It was we needed a capitalist Germany to fight a communist threat.
That's right. And that's how the wall got built, is because we supported and fundraised for Germany, and we created prosperity and assistance. And then
communism dumped money in there like nobody's business. And we did the same.
But Russia saw that as a threat. They saw that as an expansion of democracy. And that was a direct threat from an ally. And that's how the Cold War started.
And then we did the same thing with Japan. We dumped a lot of money in there to modernize and industrialize their economy.
Yeah.
As a way of showing Russia that, look, we can prop up capitalism like nobody's business. Right. You know, your Soviet Union evil empire is absolutely nothing compared to what we can do. But then when you look at, say, our failed wars that we have done, you know, we went into Vietnam with the goal of stop communism.
Yep.
Okay, well, how do you do that? turns out bomb the hell out of them. Turns out bomb the hell out of them wasn't the answer.
No.
And we didn't do any sort of nation building like we did with Germany and Japan.
Right.
We didn't do the levels of investment in Vietnam like we did in post World War Germany and Japan. It wasn't even close.
Right.
You know, it was
carpet bombing them. Yeah.
It was carpet bombing. It was Agent Orange. It was napalm. And
no changing minds.
Yeah. And throwing a bunch of arms at a group of people who were not seeing any relative improvements to their quality of life.
For sure.
And then we had one, I would argue, successful war, but once again, clear goal, get Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
It was very clear. It's like, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. We had a coalition of multiple Arab countries. It's like, this was very well defined. This was going to have a definite end. And once we hit that end, it was like, no, we're stopping. So once we pushed the Iraqi forces back into Iraq, that was it. Game over. We're done.
I will say, though, it's interesting and nobody talks about it. Saddam Hussein was an oil producer without a port. And when Iran started blocking vessels that were carrying, you know, Iraqi oil, Saddam decided he needed access to the coast. And that's why he was traveling through Kuwait along the Iranian line, was to just get a port so he could distribute his oil. And the United States sided with the oil rich Saudis and Iranians, you know, to help keep him from his port.
There was also the fact that Saddam thought that Kuwait was drilling under Iraqi soil,
right?
And was stealing and oil
he was ethnically cleansing his country at the same time.
Oh yeah, no, like that's a whole fucking mess.
I mean, he wasn't a great dude. I'm saying his objective was obvious, though, given the circumstances that were thrust upon him.
Right. So you end up with that. We actually have a very clear set of goals that are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we're done, and that's it. But then we go into Iraq and Afghanistan 20 years later without clear goals.
Right. Well, goals of propping up a system to divert investment from America to the military in the region. Like, they just wanted a budget. They wanted a military budget, an expanding military budget, and occupation provides the means for that.
The goal was stop terrorism. Okay, well, how do you do that? Well, it turns out, you know, carpet bombings and precision guided munitions and, you know, accidentally, quote unquote, bombing schools and hospitals multiple times wasn't the way to do it.
Right. Nope.
And when you finally did cut off the quote unquote head of the snake, then we decided that we needed to stick around for another 10 years.
Right. And make sure the snake died.
Yeah. So there's that. And, you know, yes, there's the concern that ISIS is going to, you know, gain itself a stronghold. And, you know, as we saw with the suicide bombing at the airport, you know, it's going to be a very real issue for Afghanistan in the near future. Yeah. Taliban turns out they hate ISIS. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But there's a Venn diagram of soldiers that worked with both or family members that have worked for one or the other. It's a complicated look. The Middle East is a fucking sand desert that we should have never gotten into. Britain never should have gotten in there. It's not our region, and it's not our place to say where the lines are drawn. I don't care. ISIS wants to attack us because we're there. If we're not there, we have reason to attack them if they try and attack us. Like, there was a bombing just today because it was a drone strike that killed Isaac bombers, right? Mm-hmm. Like suicide bombers. And the explosion, they're saying, showed that there was explosives in the vehicle.
Yeah, it was a vehicle-borne explosion. It was going to be a vehicle-borne suicide attack.
Right.
It was huge, so... Mm-hmm. Which, you know, hey, whatever.
You killed 13 of our servicemen, a Navy soldier and
Navy
Marines. Right, Navy corpsman, a soldier, and like Marines. You need to pay for that. As soon as I saw that explosion, I was like, oh man, why didn't we just bury a nuke in that city and get out?
It turns out that nukes are highly frowned upon by most societies, and I would agree with that.
I know, but the CIA does worse stuff in South America. Just plant a big nuke there and say, oh my God, their nuclear program went awry. We didn't even know. We didn't tell anybody. Oops.
but I hate to say it, but they're going to figure out real quick what a W-88 nuclear warhead looks like.
Yeah. I got you.
I mean, nuking, bad idea. Period. End of story. But we do have the Moab, so we can at least make it look huge.
Bigger and bigger bombs that don't have a nuclear payload is amazing.
Literally like dropping a fucking Greyhound bus.
Right, exactly. And somebody was just like, well, I don't know. Here's my bright idea. Let's make it a little bigger.
Meanwhile, it's a fucking Greyhound bus, and they put precision munition steering on it. I'm like, right. Precision munition steering on a fucking Greyhound bus. This sounds, it's like speed, except for, you know, terminal velocity to hit the ground.
Right. Well, Jeffrey, I got a great idea. Let's make a bomb as big as a blue whale.
I wonder if a Hercules could lift that.
Well, we'll just build a bigger plane to contain it. Oh, I mean, God. That's not advanced thinking, is it? It's progressive thinking. Like, let's build a bomb. Let's build a hydrogen bomb. Let's build a bigger hydrogen bomb. Like, at some point, you just have to realize bigger isn't always better, you know? Inventing a new solution. You know, a bigger motor isn't as good as maybe a smaller electrical motor, hey, or fusion.
I mean, when you think about it, it's like, even at the height of the Korean War, like, we had a commander get relieved because they were dead set on wanting to nuke the North Koreans. So it's like, yikes.
We covered that. And during the nuclear age, there was a group of people that were making nuclear rifles, like nuclear bullets and nuclear hand grenades with smaller capacities. But they soon realized that not only would it kill everybody on the other side, but it would kill the guy that threw it too, you know?
Right. You know, like they had that fucking Davy Crockett launcher, and it's just like, like, that's a terrible decision. Like, who the fuck thought this was great? Oh, but it's tactical. Yeah, so you're tactically going to remove your own troops. That sounds like a fucking brilliant plan. Hey, y'all, I got this great idea. Wait, isn't that going to kill us? Look, you're deploying Maybe. On...
There's going to be some casualties. Yeah. That was the Cold War. We assumed casualties. Casualties were built in. They were a benefit, not a... You know, not a negative. They were a positive, not a negative.
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. War is so funny to me. War is just so funny to me. Like, I don't know. I don't know why we're in the Middle East. I don't know why anybody ever was. And, you know, I've been spending a lot of time trying to figure out if Palestine was the asshole or if Israel was the asshole. And it turns out
Britain was the asshole.
Right. Well, not only that, but I don't know how to explain it. Like, they put Israel in there and Palestine was like, oh, okay, we're going to start fighting them. But then Jordan came in and Egypt came in and were like, we're going to take care of it before Palestine does. And then they dramatically lost in 6 days, like Syria taken, Israel took it, Jordan took it, you know, Egypt, they took it. They took all the land in a war that Palestine wasn't allowed to be involved in. And so, I don't know. I don't know who the asshole is, but it isn't Palestine. And I'm pretty sure it could be Egypt.
Well, the thing about history is that the longer you look at it, the more assholes you find.
Right. But what I'm trying to figure out is, like, occupation is one thing. Moving people in is one thing. But like when a country fights for land and wins it, that's a different precedent. Like, that's theirs now. You know, and that's what kind of sucks is that everybody was fighting Israel for Palestine's land and they lost to Israel, you know, and it's like Palestine lost their land, but they didn't have a chance to fight for it.
Right.
And so I feel really bad for the Palestinians, but I feel really all right with Israel winning in that war. Now, what they did afterwards, ethnic cleansing of the land around them so they could expand, I think that's an atrocity we need to talk about, you know? And so after the Six-Day War, what Israel did to the Palestinians is an atrocity. And that I don't like at all. You know what I mean?
You think about the number of wars that were fought over that. I mean, you had you had the 47-48 Arab-Israeli War. You had the Six-Day War. You had the Yom Kippur War.
Right.
I mean, yeesh.
There was just a battle a few months ago. You know what I mean?
I think there's one still right now. I think that's ramped back up again.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, but my issue is Palestinians have never had the right to live on their own land because somebody gave that land that they were living on to Israel. And I want to say Israel has been, through my estimations and research, pretty focused on just winning the battles and the wars, but not thinking about the people that it's hurting. Israel never... They never really went, should we do this? They went, we have to do this for our own survival. And what I'm thinking is there's a flaw in the thinking with Israel, and I'm not quite sure, but this is where I'm headed next. Israel is fighting for their homeland. I don't believe that where they are is their homeland. I believe their homeland is closer to Ethiopia. I think they're occupying the wrong land because I don't know where Egypt got their slaves from, but I'm pretty sure it isn't from where Israel is now. I'm pretty sure it was from Ethiopia. So that's where I'm working at.
I mean, there's a lot of that's a tough one. Like I don't know a whole lot about further back history and maps. So yeah, I think that's definitely something for history experts and scholars to discuss there.
Definitely.
Because unfortunately, I just don't know. Like, all I can say is I know what I've seen in the Bible, but I can only speculate that how accurate that is. So
that's what I'm saying. At some point, it's moot because the Bible isn't an accurate history. It's more of a fable-based history.
Yep.
Man. Okay. So, racist Florida man attacks at somebody at an airport in Miami. I have to get these Florida man things in because Florida men are buttfuck crazy.
I mean,
I don't have much information on it other than he was trying to box an employee without wearing a mask at the airport.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, okay, good. Oof. There's a video, but I didn't get to watch the video. I just saw racist Florida man.
I haven't watched it either. So it's absolutely spectacular. But, you know, I guess,
you know,
that dude is unfortunately going to find himself on a federal travel ban list for the rest of his life. And even depending on, how your busing's, how your state metro system works, he might not even be able to use that anymore.
That's good. That's good.
So
we just need to stop being racist. Hey, another story from racist Florida man, as we often do these ways. Donald Trump earned almost $2.4 billion in his 4 years in office. And I don't have much of the Venn diagram or the pie chart of what he got it in, but most of it was acquisitions, hotels, and branding.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Right. But then it dropped in 2020. He was in 2019, 2017, 2018, he was earning $6.4 million a year, and then it dropped to 48 when COVID hit. So that might explain some of his actions in trying to control a pandemic.
Yeah. Turns out when you suck at dealing with active threats to your community, you don't make any money. So
right. When all you do is think about money, you don't really think about the community threats.
Right.
Why do people keep electing rich people into office?
Because they have the money to run, period, end of story.
Gotcha.
Like what time, like how much time does your average person who's working a job or two have to run a campaign? Like right. You still have to put food on the table. at home. Mm-hmm. You still have to make sure that, you know, your family's needs are taken care of. So the idea that, you know, you can just fuck off from your job and lose your benefits and, you know, run a campaign is kind of a shit show. You can't do it. I mean, that's why, unless you're getting, you know, sponsors, you know, or donations, like, it just isn't possible to do. Like, the idea, like, so for example, if I were just to decide, you know what, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to, you know, run for politics, like, that's really going to fuck with my family's ability to do anything, whether it be make house payments, make sure that my kids have the items that they need to go to school, or, you know, make sure that we got food in the cupboards. Like, I can't just drop what I'm doing to become a politician. That's just not how it works. However, when you have, you know, fuck you money, it's pretty easy for you just to decide that, you know what, I can just not do anything and I'm going to run a political campaign for myself to get elected because I don't need to have a job that makes ends meet. So realistically speaking, that's why rich people keep getting elected. They have the ability to do it. You know, if I were to magically become rich, you know, the likelihood, I wouldn't say the likelihood, the ability for me to become a politician would be a lot easier because I don't have to worry about how much time I have. My time would be spent focused on running a campaign, not, okay, now I've put in my 8 hours, I'm able to make sure that my kids are going to have, you know, food in the pantry. So now I'm going to try and run. That's really just all it is.
Okay. It's the people that are front and center that can do it, that are doing it. Yeah,
they can do it. It's and then basically, like we've talked about before, until, you know, somebody can figure out how to use the power of social media to run a campaign in their off time. But even still, you know, unless the office that they end up taking pays, number one, more than what they're making currently, provides better family benefits, it still doesn't make sense. So, like, even like being involved at a community level, like, for example, there was a couple of positions that were open here that, you know, at some point maybe I'll consider running for.
Mm-hmm.
But they are, you know, they only pay so much. They're like $25,000 a year positions. And, you know, there are people out there that are, you know, running for these things and they've got the money to do it. And I'm like, I don't.
Yeah. Tallahassee Soil and Water Commissioner is a volunteer. Mm. You get elected, but you volunteer to run, you know?
Mm-hmm. So makes it difficult to be able to run that and to do that kind of stuff. So,
right. And have a life. So it seems like in 2 hours, the solution to everything we talked about was 25 by 25, a living wage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame. That would change a lot of lives.
Well, I mean, living wage would always change lives. Or, you know, finding mechanisms in which you can better support your community.
Right. You know, I heard a story and I didn't get a chance to investigate it yet, but Joe Biden apparently wants to eliminate student loans for anybody facing a severe disability.
Yep. That one, that one I did hear.
The disability community says, oh shit, people are going to hate us more.
What, living on your fucking Medicaid or Medicare that barely covers anything?
People think that's what somebody quote. People think we get things for free, and now that we're going to get something for free, they're going to be mad that we got something for free because they think we get something for free.
When the reality is that, you know, what they're doing is they're forgiving student loans on people who can no longer work, period.
And will not be able to pay it back.
Right. So, right. It's like, so rather than sit there and penalize people for not being able to work because of, well, the fact that they've become disabled. Right. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. Like
in a pandemic that they had no control over.
Right. So, yeah, that is true. That's what they're looking at doing. And it's
cool. I think it's going to free money up for disabled people to become entrepreneurs and hire disabled people. So I think this is the beginning of a long-term amazing arc that I want to watch.
That's my hope, is that that's what it would do. But honestly, like, I would also make the argument if that is something that is successful for people who are blind, I would make the argument that it'll be successful for anybody who has a student loan.
Yes. Yes. From the disabled people I talk to, there's two camps that I'm feeling sorry for myself, or I'm going to prove that I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I think people that are seeking education that are disabled, they're trying to overcome something that's really, really insurmountable, and they're doing it. And those people can go on to do a lot. And
my pause for concern though is that, you know, the way that I read it was that they were excusing the student loans for people who were at the point of disability where they couldn't work.
Right.
So
exactly. With severe, they added the word severe disability.
So my concern is that, you know, if people are shown that they are able to work or able to do something, that it's going to disqualify them from being able to get that. So you're basically just putting enough out there so that way it's like, yeah, these people can't work, they're not going to be able to do anything, so we're just going to forgive that, because what are we going to do, keep having them bill out for something that they'll never be able to pay back? Whereas people with disabilities who obviously have found a mechanism to be able to work and do something aren't going to qualify for it.
Interesting. So that's, it's just relieving a stressor because there's already another stressor on the people. We're going to forgive the student loan debt because we already have you in another cycle of poverty. We don't want to have you in two. We're going to take one away.
That's basically how I read into it.
Okay. That's sad. That's pathetic. That's our government.
Yeah. And so, you know,
maybe we should stop relying on our government to do these things for us.
Bingo.
I'm all in favor of protecting my borders. You know, I just, like I said, you spent a lot of money in Afghanistan. If you had spent it here instead of being there, we would have been better off, I think, you know?
Well, and to me, like, if we had spent the money on relieving the student loan debt for everybody, you would find that there would be a lot more entrepreneurism. You'd find that there'd be a lot more small business ownership. You would find that there would be a lot less debt in terms of credit cards. And you would find that you would actually be spending more money in the economy instead of more money into banks that are, you know, literally, you know, not providing the level of growth that they could be. Whereas, you know, if I had the money that I was, you know, paying in student loans, credit card debt, freed up, you know, I could be eating at different places. I could be going to different places. I could be buying different goods and services. You know, I could be paying somebody to come in and clean my house once a week, twice, you know, once, you know, things like that. But I can't do that. I don't have that ability.
But, you know, we think about reparations and how to make people whole from them living in a system of oppression. You could almost see that with student loans. The fact that there was a predatory system put in place to make sure people were in debt for as long as they possibly could be. If you looked at it as a legal thing, you might be able to fight that, you know?
And that's the tough part is that you have to make the argument that the loans were made in bad faith. And, you know, the reality there is that what was the government expecting in terms of what they were going to get back from it? Because a lot of this is supposedly that they're putting this money back into student loans, supposedly.
Right.
But that's remained to be seen.
Like grants and stuff like that.
Right. And so it makes it a little bit more difficult to prove that that's actually what's happening.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there are other mechanisms that you could have done with this easily. Or, for example, like expanding what civil service looks like and how you pay back. Because I technically work for a nonprofit, but apparently I don't work for the right nonprofit.
You work for us, buddy. You work with us.
I don't work for the government, but I work for an agency that benefits the government.
What
I do is technically a community service, but it's not enough of a community service. It's fucking weird. Like, it, basically what I do meets all of the qualifications, but doesn't meet all of the qualifications because they, unless our organization was filed as one specific 501c3, mm-hmm. it doesn't count.
Right.
Even though like every single thing that I do technically qualifies under everything else.
I gotcha.
It's weird is what it boils down to, because could I make more money doing what I do somewhere else? Absolutely. But I don't want to do it somewhere else. I'd rather do what I do and benefit my community.
I like that. We're going to have a talk about starting a 501c3. 501c3. Okay.
Nonprofit organization. So there's a, so
love it.
501c is a nonprofit organization, but then there are different subchapters.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of different ones. 501c3 is the most common, able to do a lot of different community service, apply
right. for grants. It allows you to collect donations and distribute yep. them and all that stuff.
Yep.
That's eventually within 5 years, I would like to be there, public access to be there. So,
right. You know, and that would be fantastic to be able to figure out what that looks like.
Yeah. I still don't know. People keep saying, well, you want to start a charity. What do you want to donate to? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, there's so many problems. There's so many issues. I don't know, but that's for the group of people to come up with once I create the 503, you know?
Yeah.
So 513, sorry.
Yeah. So it's definitely one of those things where it's like, yeah, there will be a time and a place to figure it out, but there's also so many different nonprofit organizations out there and they're classified in different chapters and they do great things. It's just that, you know, for whatever reason, they've decided to put them into a different realm. Like, for example, credit unions are 501c corporations. It's just that they're a 501c14, if I remember correctly. You know, because literally, you know, 501c, you know, like a credit union, the only people that you are beholden to are the people that work for the credit union and the people who put their money in the credit union, who don't have investors to answer to, nothing like that. Our goal is literally to work for the community, period, end of story. Right. So why is it that doing that level of community work and supplying that level of banking function to for people who normally that's out of their reach, why is that not okay in terms of community service or something like that?
Right.
You know, because essentially what you're doing at a credit union level is you're providing a level of service that, number one, rivals banks, number two, is meant to help affected communities, and by applying that leverage of taking what the community is willing to invest and reinvest that in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas banks are pretty good at taking what the community wants to invest and paying it out in bonuses and mm-hmm. Holiday parties that have strippers and coke.
Right.
I mean, I'm pro strippers and coke, just not with giant CEO bonuses. You know, you can buy your own strippers and coke.
I don't want to invest my money and have them take the dividends for hookers and coke for them.
Right.
Right. They should be community hookers and cocaine.
Our hookers and cocaine.
Yeah, our hookers and cocaine. Wow.
Well, I mean, and so what it boils down to is that, you know, by expanding what that looks like, I think that you could easily build more value into community service and serving the greater good. Like, there is no reason why what I am doing shouldn't be a part of that student loan forgiveness program.
Right.
I could quite easily go do what I do for the government or a private entity. You know, it's just that what I've chosen to do, I've chosen to do at the place that I do it at, simply because I want to make sure that, number one, the community is being served and that they're safe in doing what they're doing with us. So.
Yep. Yeah, that should be our message for this week. Community involvement trumps national grievance, you know?
National grievance and national greed.
Yeah. I think we're just focused on the air up there, but we should be looking at the grass down here, you know what I mean? And that's the thing,
it's so easy to build a community level involvement that either number one, you know, can expand into other communities, or number two, that literally, you know, you could have someone come up to you and say, hey, I want to start this in my community. Do you got any pointers? And you can literally be like, here's all of the charters and paperwork on how we do what we do. Take it and go do it in your own community. Let's do this.
Exactly. Maybe that's what it should be. Maybe public access should teach people how to create their own, you know,
how to create. Yeah. How to create your own community movements. Absolutely. We meet community that. Necessities. Absolutely. And have it just be a knowledge network.
Right. When you see garbage on the side of your road in your own community, you don't look for the federal government to bring a garbage truck. You know, right. You need to address that. So I like that. I like that. I don't know why this question popped into my head, but we're towards the end, so I'll ask it anyway. What's your favorite Smurf?
My favorite Smurf? Well, yeah. As I'm getting older, I'm definitely becoming Papa Smurf.
There you go. He's the only one I remember.
Well, that and Smurfette, which, as I've gotten older, Smurfette both concerns and confuses me.
Okay.
Because there's only one Smurfette.
There is only one Smurfette and a lot of Smurfs.
Oh, no.
I have nowhere to go. I'm not a Smurf fan. I used to watch them back in the day.
I never really. I mean, I saw an episode or two. Was never really my thing.
Okay.
I like
the Smurfs.
I liked Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was my
thing. There you go. Okay.
Saturday morning cartoons, jumping up early to, you know, I mean, I used to get up so early so that way I wouldn't miss Saturday morning cartoons that I would accidentally get up when the station was still doing like its sign-ons and, you know, broadcasting the whole national anthem and the flyovers, yeah. America the Beautiful and this, that, and the other. And then it would be like 2 hours until Saturday morning cartoons. And that's when I'm like, oh, I fucked up.
my Saturday morning cartoons were the Hulk Hogan show.
Mm.
I don't know, just a bunch of wrestlers cartoon, Lou Albano and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and all those guys, you know, good versus evil in a cartoon sort of thing.
And
Hulk Hogan got around. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was one of those things. You know what I noticed being older? I've seen the rise and fall of athletes. And that's so interesting to me. I mean, Tom Brady's whole career fits in half of my year, in my half of my lifetime. You mm-hmm. know, that's amazing to me. That's just so weird.
It's wild.
When I was a kid, I would see athletes and I would be like, they're amazing. That's who they are. They're a role model. Mean Joe Green. What the hell? And now it's just like, you remember Odell Beckham, you know? Mm-hmm. Or I don't even know some of the guys that used to be, you know?
Yeah. Like Odell Beckham was going to be something spectacular and that didn't mm-hmm. happen. And,
right.
I mean, he's made some amazing plays, but, you know, hasn't been on any Super Bowl teams.
No. Nope. What about Jimmy Graham? Like Jimmy Graham, now he's a Bear, but he was a Seahawk.
And he was a Saint, and he was, and he was, and he was, and he was.
Yep.
No, like it's absolutely wild. You know, some of the things that, you know, for example, I remember when Cam Newton came onto the scene, and I was like, oh my God, yes, you know, the Panthers are going to have an awesome quarterback. And then we finally went to a Super Bowl many, 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 many years later, and got absolutely trounced.
It was a good team, though. It was a good team. Greg Olsen, fucking Cam Newton.
I still think that, like, I'm like, you know, I liked the 2003 Panthers. You know, they had Jake DeLome as quarterback, and I mean, they were just weird and scrappy. Julius Peppers was on that team.
One of my favorite all-time players, by the way.
So, no, that was a good one. They didn't win that one either, but it was, you know, they went up against the Patriots and they lost, you know, to a field goal kick. So,
right.
Whereas the Panthers just got straight up beaten.
And now Cam Newton's a Patriot. How cool is that?
It's not. I don't like the Patriots. Although it was like, you know, for me, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, you know, I'm going to laugh if Tom Brady goes to the Buccaneers and he's just awful. But I was also going to laugh if Tom Brady goes to the Buccaneers and wins a Super Bowl. It was kind of, it was going to be like, you know what, if even if he just was like a mediocre quarterback for the Buccaneers.
Right.
But the fact that they went in there and then, you know, his first year there, they go and they win a Super Bowl. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, fine.
Right. It's amazing how a quarterback with accuracy can win you a Super Bowl when you have all of the other parts.
Well, it's not even just that. Yeah. I mean, you like having a quarterback with accuracy, but also having a line that protects said quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. Even they had it, but Jameis Winston held on to the ball way too long and threw it like wide. He wasn't a great quarterback, although people thought he was because he had an arm. He just had no accuracy or no sense of timing. So all you needed was a quarterback that could deliver the ball to the right people. And didn't they get Antonio Brown too?
Yep, they got Antonio Brown and
Mike
Gronk.
Evans and Antonio Brown
and Gronk.
What else would you want? Like
they had a ton of weapons. They had a ton of weapons, and that won them a Super Bowl.
Right. And you notice that I live in Florida. Tom Brady moved to Tampa Bay, and I'm still a Bears fan. I don't jump on bandwagons like that. And I have a Tampa Bay jersey, you know, so it's not like I don't have them. I have a Jacksonville jersey too. I don't know what's going on with that team. I don't want to be near that. I'd rather be a Bears fan than any Florida team fan. At least
Jacksonville doesn't have Tebow anymore,
right? They got rid of Minshew too. Like I looked and they like their quarterback of the future last year is not even a quarterback anymore. Yep. You know, and Mitch Trubisky's on Buffalo as a backup. Like, what did I miss this past 2 years? You know what I mean?
I just haven't watched football in a long time, really.
Me neither. Thanks it's just to not Donald the Trump.
Same. It's just not the same. So that's all right. I got better things to do on my Sundays.
Okay. Yeah, you do. And you're going to go do them right now.
And I am.
But you give Debbie a hug first because I miss them so much.
Oh, you know, I could go over there and give Debbie a hug for you. I'm sure they'd appreciate it. Or they might just stare at me and be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, yeah, I only hear half the conversation. For everybody to know, I am putting some episodes that I liked on YouTube as Red Circle Spotlights. It's a playlist. And the next one to go up is the conversational introverts that I did with Debbie. So that's fantastic. Exciting.
That'll be
check
a good
that
one.
Out. It's a good episode, and I always want them back to talk, you know, but I understand. I was thinking about it. What I do often is ask people to open up about things that, you know, I force them to have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I might bring up topics that they don't necessarily want to be on the record as having an opinion on.
Well, you know, and I think it's, you know, I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind as we have conversations is that, you know, what we're trying to do is foster conversation and foster growth. You know, the mm-hmm. idea isn't that we want somebody to just, you know, here's the hill that I'm dying on. You know, let's start the conversation that actually goes somewhere that actually changes things, you know, because being dead set in your opinions doesn't lead to change. Being able to learn and grow and move forward with community solutions is what gets us to change.
Thanks, Jeffrey. I think I'm just going to leave it right there.
All right.
That was amazing.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I, poor little children.
Yes, we can.
Will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing.
except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome, welcome. To Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Truth.
Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Smart Radio, Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America, history in the making.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.